listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, series 3, episode number 6. Today is Tuesday, February 28th, 2023. It's JJ Sefton here, along with my good friend, co-blogger, and colleague, CBD. CBD, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. I know that everyone is waiting with bated breath to hear my snowblower travails. And yes, I used it this morning. It was fantastic. It's only several inches of snow at the most, but I was 100% committed to the use of snowblowers today. And for no other reason, honestly, than to use some of that fuel that I bought. It was a nice internal combustion engine, pumping lots and lots of CO2 into the atmosphere because, damn it, it's too damn cold here. So we need some global warming. Anyway, let's move on, shall we?
Let us move on.
Yes. So Sefton and I were talking earlier about how the Biden administration has really shifted the entire focus of the United States government away from support of Israel and toward what they would consider an even-handed approach, which of course means even-handed between a liberal democracy in Israel and a savage 7th century bunch of lunatics in Iran. So the latest thing is that Israel was sort of kneecapped at the UN Security Council meetings. The United States did not push hard against some of these, a couple of rather lunatic, what are they called, the resolutions. And it speaks to a larger issue, and that is that the Biden administration has completely flipped American policy away from containment of Iran. And I don't understand why they're doing it, because there is nothing but evil down the road if they get what they want, which is, let's face it, a nuclear-capable Iran. And that should scare the hell out of everyone on Earth, apparently, except for the Biden administration. They are rushing into the abyss of possible nuclear exchange in the Middle East. And, well, who the hell knows what's going to happen? They seem to be rushing into a nuclear exchange in Ukraine, so perhaps they just like nuclear weapons.
Exactly, which is funny, because they decry the use of, they go crazy every time the anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki come up. But in any case, as far as Iran goes, and we've touched upon this in several podcasts before, but it is always worth repeating in that the American left, or as I call them, the anti-American left, which is really what they are, views America and America's superpower status not as for all our, whatever foibles we've had over the years, and we're not perfect, but we have been the absolute moral authority when it comes to maintaining global security. And we have been since the end of World War II, whether we liked it or not. They just view America as the sole superpower with the fall of the Soviet Union as an absolute catastrophe. I remember clearly when Madeleine Albright went crazy about that. And since then, they've been trying, ever since the fall of the Soviet Union, the globalists and the fools in Foggy Bottom in the State Department have been doing everything they can to try and sort of balance the playing field by giving our enemies and really very, very bad actors out there leverage. They want more than just a unipolar world circling around the United States and our values. They want it around Red China. They want it around, oddly enough and ironically enough, they don't want it around Russia these days, but they certainly do not mind if the Chi-Coms also have influence in the world, regardless of what that means. And this is madness. So Iran having the bomb and the anti-Israel sentiment, along with really at the core of it, is anti-Westernism and anti-Semitism. So it's two birds with one stone. They'll try to kneecap and destroy the state of Israel as best they can by arming its enemies, including not just Iran, but a renewed arming of the Palestinians and really Hamas with money and the money to buy weapons to continue their so-called pay-for-slay activities, which I believe we just had another one. An American student was just shot to death in I think it was in Jerusalem. I'm not sure, but that happened, I think, late yesterday. So these things are not really, they're not surprising, but they sure are, they're insane. There is no reason to have these views and have these values and want to give Iran the path toward a nuclear weapon, thinking that they'll be responsible, and because that'll be a check on Israel, which does have nuclear weapons, of course, but that the Iranians will not use those weapons in a first strike, you know, wherever, whether at first, for sure against Israel, if not at other targets. So this is just, it's typical, it's absolute, but it's madness. And there is no explanation for it other than an antipathy toward one's own values and just plain old good old anti-Semitism at the heart of it.
Well, I think your point of antipathy toward our own values is valid. I think that's actually driving it even more than their joyful anti-Semitism. And you mentioned the disgust with the use of atomic weapons in World War II in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which, of course, ended the war, probably saved many millions of Japanese lives, and probably several hundred thousand American soldiers, too. As an aside, Fairfax County School Board member Abrar Omeish, some wog wearing a hijab and, you know.
Can we say wog on TV?
Yeah, we can say wog. Sorry, she's okay. A wog. I mean, she's an anti-American scum. She said something during a school board meeting about the Battle of Iwo Jima, which unfortunately happened and set a record for human evil. I find that just, you know, one more step down the road of 1984-ish manipulation of the past and our actually glorious history in the island hopping that we used quite effectively to end the war in the Pacific and during World War II, that this woman isn't being hounded out of the school board and my desire would be to hound her out of America is disgusting. I mean, that she could say that is a testament to how far we have fallen. And it speaks to the antipathy of the bien passant toward America and toward American exceptionalism. They'd find our power, our success, our moral leadership in the world to be disgusting. They don't want America to be powerful. They don't want an ascendant America. And they will do anything it takes to beat us down.
You know, of course, she mentions the great human tragedy of Iwo Jima. But I would imagine if you had mentioned the word Auschwitz-Birkenau to her, she would probably say, well, you know, we have to sort of look at it from the German point of view,
yeah,
don't we? I guarantee she would say that or deny that it actually happened. But, you know, and you also mentioned Iwo Jima, our dear friend and commenter at Ace of Spades, Never Give Up. His father was on Iwo Jima, and he is actually caught on camera in a very, very famous piece of film footage where you can see how absolutely terrified he is. He is doing everything he can to literally crawl into his helmet. And miraculously, of course, he obviously survived. But what an absolute insult that is. This woman just has no, I won't even say that she doesn't have a knowledge of history. She knows history, and all these people know history. But what they are doing, like her and this Nicole Hannah Jones with the Krylon hair and her 1619 project, is rewriting and bastardizing history to make us evil. And that is just beyond the pale, but it has to be fought. And, you know, sort of, I guess we're going off on a tangent a little bit. God bless people like Ron DeSantis and other wonderful leaders in other states who are putting their foot down and saying, no, we're not going to teach this garbage. It's not a differing point of view. It's absolute trash and tripe and lies. And good on him for standing up for this. And I think that's at least for me, and I'm sure for you, a major feather in his cap on his way potentially to the White House.
Oh, absolutely. He mentioned a few days ago his disgust with our current foreign policy in Ukraine and how it simply does not make any sense for us to be funding this war. It's obviously dipping his toes in American foreign policy. It's one step toward his running for president in 2024. I welcome him into the fray, I think, and everybody knows how I feel about Trump. I think his time has passed. Although, actually, another segue, to be fair to President Trump, he just released a video about his trade platform for his second term. And I have to admit, it makes a hell of a lot of sense. He's talking about what he calls universal baseline tariffs on most foreign products, which I think makes a tremendous amount of sense. He's trying to shift the manufacturing base away from China and the Far East and back into the United States. And you know, we've spent two generations destroying the manufacturing base in the United States, and he thinks that this will go a long way to repairing it. And I absolutely agree. And this is exactly the kind of stuff that he needs to be doing now, instead of sniping at Ron DeSantis and being prickly and, quite frankly, childish when it comes to unimportant attacks in social media on him.
I do agree with that. It would be as we've discussed previously, you know, politics, as I say, ain't beanbag. And, you know, what are you supposed to hit each other with? The comfy pillows, like in, you know, the Spanish Inquisition from Monty Python. But no, you do have to go after your opponent. But I mean, if you can go after them on policy points, that's obviously the ideal situation. But as I said, it's not beanbag. And unfortunately, it does bring out in a lot of people, and sadly, with Trump, and it was also very effective in his first campaign, you can't deny it, it brings out this rather, you know, sort of puerile attacks on one's opponents. And sometimes they stick, and like with Lion Ted Cruz and Little Marco and so on and so forth. But it would be a breath of fresh air if both he, instead of doing this, and he's doing it now, as you pointed out, CBD, if he and DeSantis and whomever else can do here, oh, you're going to do trade tariff program against our imports to save our industry. Hold my beer. I'm going to go one better, and I'm going to wipe out the regulatory system and the crazy union systems that have drove manufacturing overseas in the first place. And then somebody else will come up with a great idea. And this is what gets people excited, as opposed to the usual, you know, the usual attack memes that Trump and others, of course, will do. But no, this is commendable, absolutely commendable on him. And I do hope he sticks to it, just as, you know, another segue. I hope he continues to show his leadership, even when he's not even in office, as he did by visiting East Palestine, Ohio.
He showed up in East Palestine, did exactly the right thing. He demonstrated quite effectively that he is a leader, that he can connect to the people. He went there before any federal representative went to East Palestine. And he went and he talked to people and he brought them. Apparently, he brought a couple of truckloads of water or who the hell knows what he brought. And it doesn't really matter. It was a symbol. But he went and he walked and he talked to people and was presidential. That what the buddy gig? How the hell do you pronounce his name?
I believe he's pronounced Booty Judge, but I've
Booty Judge. Well, it's not spelled that way, so I'm going to call him Buddy Gig. So Buddy Gig shows up and apparently didn't talk to anybody. He made a cursory visit, showed up, got some photos taken and left. He quite seriously did not talk to anyone. And that's, you know, that's a wonderful example of how dysfunctional the Biden administration is. And
yeah, a vegetable president, so-called.
Well, he went to Ukraine, you know, instead of going to East Palestine.
He goes to Ukraine to deliver another how many billion dollars of taxpayer funds, not to arm the Ukrainians and also to support their retirement system. While meanwhile, our economy is crashing and burning. Toxic trains are crashing and burning and being set on fire by the government itself. And he doesn't show up because whatever. I don't know what Karen Jean-Pierre was saying about it and making excuses. And this is another thing. They just, aside from hating America, this is a perfect example of how they hate America. They hate so-called, and I hate this expression, flyover country, because the people of East Palestine and that surrounding area voted for Donald Trump in two elections by an overwhelming margin. And this is nothing more to me what they're doing by either ignoring him and worse, setting the things on fire incompetently. This is political retribution. And it's the worst kind imaginable. You see this in third world countries. Well, guess what America is now? It's a third world country. As far as other officials going, J.D. Vance, God bless him. He was literally, I don't think he was in office more than a month or less than 3 weeks when this happened. And he shows up on the ground, sticking his hand in the toxic waste and excoriating the federal government for not getting down there. And where is his co-senator, a Democrat named Sherrod Brown? He's been off the radar since this thing began. I haven't heard anything, a peep out of this guy. And he's usually spouting off about everything under the sun that's anti-American. But of course, his own constituents doesn't have time for. This is typical. And it's tragic.
That's exactly the kind of robust populism that we need in the United States. Vance showed up. He spoke with the people. He expressed empathy. Sympathy, empathy. I've always been confused by those two words, and is probably going to be successful in part because of what he did. And again, the Biden administration, you know, people talk about Joe Biden as this, you know, man of the people, in spite of the fact that he lies through his teeth. Well, he means well, and he's sort of this old guy, looks like your grandfather, blah, 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 blah. But it's all fake. Everybody knows that it's all fake. The fact is that the media pretend that he is a man of the people when he is not. J.D. Vance, in fact, is a man of the people, and he showed it. And Donald Trump is a man of the people, and he showed it. And Ron DeSantis is a man of the people, and he shows it. So that is the kind of retail politics that we need on the right. I was going to say the Republican Party, but the Republican Party is probably irrevocably broken. I don't think that there's much chance that it can survive in its current state. But anyway,
just on that note, that asshole Paul Ryan, he said if Donald Trump is the nominee, he's not going to show up at the Republican National Convention.
I'm sorry.
Great, wonderful. You know, what makes you think you're going to be invited to the Republican? Well, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Paul Ryan. Oh, fantastic. The man had a majority in the House, and we had a majority in the Senate, and he did nothing. So.
McKee and McConnell sabotaged Donald Trump. Like we say, we can blame Donald Trump for some of his foibles and this and that, but he literally was whatever he accomplished, he did, I think, virtually on his own, in spite of. And I think he had more opposition from the GOP probably than even or as much as the Democrats. So this just defines for you the fact that America it's American politics is now. If you want to call it a two-party system, I don't see it. You know, it ain't there. It's the uniparty. We still have to go through these motions, of course, of retail politics, of primaries and choosing candidates and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, you get people like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and all these other people, and Mitt Romney. What does it mean? It means nothing. It's just it's the same thing, just slightly slower speed, which means our destruction.
Fetterman, he's in a psychiatric facility, drooling into a cup. I mean, the rumor has it that he's brain dead. He was brain dead before he went in, so that really doesn't change anything. I don't believe that he's had some significant setback. I think that he simply has not recovered from the stroke that he had in May, I think it was, of last year. And, he was dragged across the finish line by a combination of incredible Republican failure and probably a significant amount of cheating in Pennsylvania. But the idea that this man is a United States senator is disgusting. I think it's a joke. And we as a country are diminished when we elect people like Fetterman. Even were he healthy, he would still be a pale reflection of what a senator should and could be.
He's a horrendous human being. Even before the stroke, he's a trust fund baby. And then he became a mayor of a small town in somewhere in Pennsylvania. I forget the name of the town, but so he just you can blame a lot of things on John Fetterman. But I mean, it was a Rust Belt community or a old mining community. He did nothing but drive it further into the ground, so to speak. And now here he comes. And spouting the most horrendous anti-American, the typical Marxist, Leninist, communist coming out of academia or wherever he came from. But all he was when he had the stroke, they didn't care. They wanted a body to fill that seat. And now you have this Josh Shapiro character who's the governor whose election also theoretically was kind of questionable. We'll never really know because Pennsylvania electoral politics, that was one of the states where the six states that threw the 2020 election. So all they want is for him to be able to appoint somebody into that seat. And that's all that matters. They don't care if it's a rutabaga. They don't care if it's a ham sandwich. They don't care if it's someone like an Alexandria Ocasio-Titicaca coming in there because they'll vote the way that they're supposed to vote. And so, call it what you will, but it's an embarrassment. I mean, Joe Biden is an embarrassment. All of these people are an embarrassment. I mean, you look back in ancient history, what did Caligula, he made his horse a senator. We're not really far behind that, folks. I mean, this is the way it is. It's tragic, but what are you going to do?
Vote harder.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Vote harder.
So moving on to what I think is a very interesting bit of news, and that is that Project Veritas has imploded, obviously. I got an email from them a few days ago begging me to remain a supporter of their efforts. And I don't really understand it. I don't think that they realize that Project Veritas is not an organization. It is a person. And it is an organization that supports that person. By the way, he lives in New Jersey. I think he lives in my county. So, yeah, sort of interesting. Anyway, I thought that the machinations that were going on behind the scenes at Project Veritas were interesting. I don't know if you have any perspective on that, but you know, there have been suggestions that the drug that the big pharma got to them, and that's why they drove O'Keefe out. I don't know if that's true. It certainly seems like there are some shady dealings going on. And the idea that O'Keefe was abusing his expense account, I don't really care. He has produced more fantastic journalism in the last 10 years than the sum total of the rest of the media in America. So the fact that he, he takes the occasional corporate jet or buys a suit or two or goes to fancy restaurants, I don't care.
You mentioned the Big Pharma. His departure from Project Veritas really was right on the heels of the aftermath of the last Project Veritas expose, which was they caught one of their chief officers. I forgot who this guy was, basically admitting that what they're doing is, if not with the COVID-19 nonsense, they're basically what's the terminology called again? Gain of function research. Yes, that's it. They were basically weaponizing relatively benign viruses and making them super viruses in order to create the cures for the virus. And this guy got caught on camera basically admitting this. And then he denied it. Of course, I think was it Pfizer? I think it was Pfizer or Moderna. I think it was Pfizer. Pfizer denied it to the hilt. And then all of a sudden, James O'Keefe is forced out. And within a day of his departure, Pfizer comes back out with a statement, a public statement, categorically denying that they were doing gain of function research. So it is oddly coincidental that this is going on. But I mean, James O'Keefe, it's not a public company. If he wants to be whatever, have travel on a jet or a private jet or have a nice Brioni suit, good on him. As you said, CBD, he's done more real journalism than the so-called mainstream media have done in 50, 60 years. And he's broken major, major stories from this stuff to election fraud, to the critical race theory, to the transgender madness, to the abortion madness, you name it. He has exposed it and he has done and his team of the real, the undercover reporters, let alone whatever the administrative staff are. But this is, it's kind of parallel, whatever was going on with him. His group might have been in infiltrated by very bad actors. Look what happened over time with places like, the National Review and so on and so forth. And everything, I think there's a saying, if something is not intrinsically conservative or remains that way, it ultimately devolves into becoming...
It will always drift left. Yes,
It will always drift left. So could there have been plants in his organization? Sure. They know he's a powerful guy and he's influential and they want to get rid of him. But they're not going to get rid of him. I mean, they tried once when he snuck into a Louisiana abortion clinic about 10 years ago and he got arrested for that. But, good for him. I mean, if it was a left-wing person going into a right-wing a Republican office, they'd call the guy a hero. But because James O'Keefe exposes the real criminality, no, he has to go to jail. But he'll be around. He's not going anywhere because you can't really have a Project Veritas without a James O'Keefe. And he'll surface, he'll surface somewhere, I'm sure, and keep doing his thing. God willing.
By the way, back to the categorical denial by Pfizer that they are doing gain of function research. Yes, if they don't call it gain of function research, what they call it is something called directed evolution, which is gain of function research. But it's got a pretty new, it's got a nice name. So, what O'Keefe found was actually the case, that they are doing gain of function research. So just a bit of an aside.
Yeah. Take a little bit of a break and we'll be back. Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. Don't dare go nowhere. And we're back with the Country of Newsletter Speaks podcast. J.J. Sefton here with my good friend and co-blogger CBD. And the other day, and she is a controversial figure. You can either love her or hate her or for whatever myriad reasons. She is a rep from Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene. She made a statement basically stating that we should really strongly consider or national divorce is really the only way out. And we're probably on our way to that right now. And she just got ripped apart both on all sides from the right and from the left. And I have to say, whatever one thinks about her, you know, you can't rip her for making that comment. If you look at what's going on between the CIA and the FBI and the January 6th protesters and the persecution of political opposition, the censorship and just the rigging of elections and so on and so on and so on. And really what it boils down to is we do have, in fact, two nations under one land. And we have one nation that is American and values American values and wants to see the republic go on as it had since 1776 and 1789. And as we had discussed earlier on a previous portion of the program dealing with the United Nations and Iran, we have another part of our country who hates their birthright, who hates the country and wants to destroy it. So the idea of somehow finding common ground when there is no common ground to move forward doesn't really make any sense. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, to her credit or to her, you know, whatever, she had the gall to point this out and got ripped apart for it. Make of that what you will. But I don't generally, believe me, if there was a way that we could coexist, and I hate that word, as Americans, regardless of what we feel about individual issues, I am praying for that every day as hard as I can. But unfortunately, I really don't see a way out of it, you know, less than some sort of a separation. So,
well, I think I'm a little bit more optimistic than you are. But let me read what Marjorie Taylor Greene wrote in a tweet. This is from, I think, about a week ago. She wrote, quote, "We need a national divorce. We need to separate by red states and blue states and shrink the federal government. Everyone I talk to says this. From the sick and disgusting woke culture issues shoved down our throats to the Democrats' traitorous America last policies, we are done." Now, unquote. Now, I cannot argue with what she said. I don't think that we are at the point where separation is required. I think that we can, as the governor of Utah said, we need marriage counseling. But I think it has to be a much more robust marriage counseling than simply two equals sitting across a table and hashing out their differences. The differences between red America and blue America are so significant that one has to win over the other. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we need to separate. I think that if we look to Florida, we can see the template by which we can succeed. Ron DeSantis is driving Florida to the right. He has cleaned up the voter rolls. He has essentially ended the leftist insanity in their schools. No, I'm sorry, that's overreaching. He has begun to end the leftist insanity in the public schools in Florida. He has unleashed, you know, that typical American let's get it done attitude that has driven us for the last 247 years. That's the way to do it. And I think that will show left-wing Florida, or what remains of left-wing Florida, that there is a better way. Will it work in the entire United States? No. I think that we will always have states like Massachusetts and probably California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, that simply will always be on the left. And that's okay. Because, you know, the founders saw the many states as these little laboratories where we can figure out what works and what doesn't. And it's okay that we have a few that don't work. I don't have a problem with that. We don't have to separate yet. However, what she said is internally logical. It is a defensible political stance, and I see nothing wrong with it.
Here's where I sort of will disagree with you, CBD, in that the problem is, as I had mentioned, is the finding of a common ground. And there's two things at work here. One is the sheer will to power of the left in driving towards turning America into a socialist hellhole on earth. They will never give up on that. Plus, you have an entrenched and ingrained bureaucracy now that is 95, 99% in lockstep with that goal. And you have politicians that are in lockstep with that goal. So I think society and government and culture has been too far corrupted where anybody is going to say, well, whoa, let's take a step back before we start turning the guns on ourselves. Because again, it's fine. Where are we going to find the common ground? It's great that people like DeSantis and others are doing the things to carve out the safe havens for people wherever they may be to come to and to live normally. In fact, there's just news popping today that the road towards what's known as Greater Iowa, where portions of Oregon and Washington are going to break away from those states and join Idaho. Greater Idaho. And so there is demographic movement. California has lost half a million people. New York is losing people left, right, and center, and Illinois is losing people. So as they lose people, then perhaps there is a realignment also of borders. But again, we're not really coming together so much as we are turning into sort of a milder version of Yugoslavia pre 1992. And hopefully it doesn't touch off. But you are right. She's not wrong for pointing this out. And God bless you, CBD, for being a little bit more optimistic with the process and with people hopefully finding the better angels of their nature. But when you look at the ideology of these people, whether it's, the transsexual crowd or whether it's the black militants or whether it's Antifa or the crazy environmentalists or you name it, they got a hate on for this country and they want to see it destroyed. And I don't think they're going to separate. They want to see us dominated and they want to take over it lock, stock and barrel. But your mileage may vary.
Let me give you a small counterexample, and that is Black America. In 2016, Black America was fresh off 8 years of a rabid, race baiting progressive, a communist. Let's be honest. Barack Obama was a socialist, communist, progressive, hard left, whatever you want to call him. He pretended not to be, but that's what he is. And 4 years later, after the policies of Donald Trump created a fantastic economic resurgence in, among other places, Black America, their support for Donald Trump, who was roundly vilified as a racist, Nazi, misogynist, he said pussy, all that kind of crap, their support for him increased significantly. Now, it didn't go there's no majority support for Donald Trump in Black America, but it went from, 95% Democrat support to 88% or 85% Democrat support. And that's just in just a few years. And I think it's that kind of change that can be driven by clear, consistent right-wing politics. And if it can happen in Black America in such a short time, it can happen anywhere except perhaps the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Right. Sefton and I both know that those people are irretrievable.
I'll forget it. Well, I would say, and I'll sort of go towards your sense of optimism in that we have obviously a media complex and so on, and a cultural complex that where you cannot really necessarily get at the truth. And there are nuggets of truth where even not just reasonable people, but really people that you wouldn't suspect would support Trump. I know I shouldn't necessarily bring up Kanye West because he's out of his mind, but even before he went crazy, but there's this guy who calls himself Charlemagne the God, and he's about as, of that sort of, rap criminal hip hop set that you can possibly imagine. And he's been peeved at the Democrats and peeved at Joe Biden and so on and so forth for what they've done. Now, is he peeved because they're not coming up with all the goodies for them quick enough? Or is it because he sees that they're just they're the total hypocrites and they're destroying Black America? It could be one. It could be a combination of both things. But until we can sort of break through this, it's still over our heads, the race card thing. Every time there's an encounter with the police and a Black suspect gets killed, that just is, that's a real drag on the thing. But perhaps over time we are shifting in that direction. I would hope we are, but yeah, this is, again, it's a real, we're in a real pickle. And these people are pouring gasoline on the fire, and they're actually the ones that are creating the fire in the first place. And it does not bode well, but we shall see what happens and how things shake out come the next few years, I guess, or more.
Anyway, so we, let me, I saw something in the news a day or two ago that just got a chuckle out of me. Western Journal, one of the many online news feeds that I read, reported about a story in Germany. And I apologize to our German speakers, but I don't have a damned clue how to pronounce this. L-O-R-R-A-C-H. Look, Sefton, help me out there.
I believe it has an umlaut over the U, correct?
Yeah, L-O.
Right, I think L-O. It's Lurach.
Lurach, okay. Anyway, it's a German city. And they accepted 638 refugees in 2022, and they will be accepting 356 more in 2023. That's very nice of them. You know, that's the insanity of Germany welcoming the world, the scum of the world in many cases. However, they are, I'll read from the article. However, in order to make room for the incoming refugees, 40 current tenants at a residential building on some street have had their rental agreements terminated. They're evicting Germans to accommodate refugees. Now, that's as good as it gets. I love this. It's fantastic. This is, I mean, the Germans are, this is national suicide in slow motion. It's unbelievable to me that.
I thought you were saying national socialism. But it is. Yeah.
You know something? The sad thing is that it's in their genes. It's in their blood. It might come back. They do more of this stuff, and maybe that German character will emerge. It's probably been beaten down enough that it won't. But anyway, it's just a little aside. I'd like this. It warms the cockles of my heart.
You know, today is, may she rest in peace, my dear, my mother of blessed memory. Today is her birthday. She would have been 95. And
happy birthday, Mrs. Sefton, I don't know.
Mama Sefton, yeah. And anyway, Mama Sefton, for those of you who do not know, was a guest of Mr. Schicklgruber and his wonderful SS and Wehrmacht in Mauthausen, Gusen, and in the labor brigades and on a death march. And she, one of the things that she was forced to do was to clear bomb damage off of the streets of Vienna, and even way up on the roof of a cathedral once. Crazy. And many, many years later, she and my dad visited Vienna. And to her glee, she saw on the streets, even back then, this has got to be going back 35, 40 years maybe, she saw an influx of Muslim immigrants and Palestinians, quote unquote. And under her breath, she was going, good, you got rid of us. You made us scrub the streets with toothbrushes. And she saw these the Viennese looking at these people like with disgust, but they couldn't do anything about it. And now here we are. It's the same thing. It's however many years later. So, you know, the Germans got they got rid of the Jews, but now they have all these immigrants that they have to deal with. So,
yeah, they got rid of the Jews and they replaced them with 7th century savages. That's good for them. It doesn't bother me at all.
Nice
car.
Meanwhile, the German government, as we had talked about before, is also sending millions and millions of dollars to the PLO to arm up Hamas and to commit terrorism. So, the schizophrenia and the madness and the insanity just boggles the mind, really, on all fronts. But there you have it. Anyway, I think we've come to the end of another wonderful podcast, CBD, unless you have some parting thoughts.
Well, I do. Go ahead. We have had a tremendous outpouring of support for Cutjib newsletter in the last week or so. And I would like to thank all of our, hopefully many, readers and listeners. It is tremendous what you have done to help us continue the fight against pretty much everybody on earth, I think. And it's flattering, actually. I have to say I am honored to be able to do this, and thank you very, very much for your wonderful support.
Yes, I echo those sentiments, and it's we can't, putting these podcasts and our the rants and the morning reports and all of the columns together is really a full-time job in and of itself, and takes a lot of work. And to know that you guys are out there listening and reading and commenting and really, you know, showing it by hitting the tip jar. And some of you so incredibly generously, it's just, it does warm the heart. And it's it just makes us want to do a better job than we're doing now. And we'll just keep striving, endeavoring to persevere, as the battle cry is. So, again, thank you all so much. And we really, really, truly appreciate it. Anyway, that seems to be it for this this edition of the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. For CBD, it's J.J. Sefton. Thanks for listening. And we will see you real soon on the next one.
Thanks for listening, folks.